Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric. From high atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
A man sets a fire in a Woodburn Walmart. A TriMet driver is punched in the face. And customers in South Carolina will have to go elsewhere for their raccoon meat.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon. I'm Dawn Taylor. And this is absolutely everything you need to know for Thursday, March 31st, 2011. Woodburn police are searching for a man they say started a fire inside a Walmart store on Monday night. Police said the man entered the store around 10:30 p.m. and made his way to the sporting goods department and then set fire to a sleeping bag that was on a shelf. A customer saw the fire and reported it to an employee, and then the employee knocked the smoldering sleeping bag to the floor and snuffed out the flames. Around the same time, surveillance cameras showed the man leaving the store and getting into a black Jeep SUV.
There's never a dull moment when you work at Walmart. It's
no.
Like living inside one giant, life-size, totally immersive role-playing game. It's like LARPing every day of your life.
Do you still have that quote from that Walmart employee woman from, yesterday? Was that ours, or was that... Everything's all a blur now. Were we listening to that in the KPAM studio?
Just a wash of sound.
Some crazy Walmart employee woman of, why... Commenting on the class action suit, it was here, and her grammar was so appallingly bad that you can't understand why she hasn't gotten any raises or promotions.
I do have it. I believe it's right here. This is the where she was explaining what she felt to be a grave injustice.
Yes.
Being foisted upon the.
Didn't have no inside information about the pay structure because that's all confidential, but I could visually see that. The men in my store was advancing much more often than the women.
Especially Jack Klugman, apparently.
Yeah.
He's risen to it at the level of spokesperson.
Did you also visually see that the men you work with could put together a grammatically correct sentence?
she was like, duh.
It's crazy. The Walmart in Woodburn sits next to a residential neighborhood where frequent customers are concerned about the danger posed by the fire. The man in the street, or in this case a woman who lives nearby, said, "Sometimes I send my kids in there alone to pick something up, and that would be scary."
And by
it's just bizarre. I can't believe it.
By something, she means Mama's Mr. and Mrs. T cocktail mix.
Yes. Woodburn police, unsurprisingly, would like to hear from anyone who knows why a guy would walk into a Walmart and set a sleeping bag on fire.
Okay. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is...
Thursday, the bestest day of the week.
Okay. It is Thursday, March 31st, 2011. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on this hour, we have your entertainment news, also your science on the march. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor here. We thank you for coming by that you might be informed and amused by this conglomeration of news stories today. If you want to get them later on, you can do it via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or legionofnews.com. It's also available on your mobile device so that you might take it with you wherever you go.
Everywhere?
Everywhere, Don.
Anywhere I go?
Everywhere.
Wow.
Everywhere on planet Earth. You can be accompanied by the dulcet sounds of our voices. And that is a world in which you are fortunate to live, my friends. So you can do that at mobile.cascadia.fm. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
Animal rights group People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals are squeamish around meat. You might be surprised to learn. And PETA members who live in San Francisco would not like to be reminded of it every time they go to the Tenderloin District. So the group's executive vice president sent a letter to San Francisco Mayor Edwin Lee.
Different kind of meat, I think they're talking about.
Asking him to consider renaming the neighborhood the Tempe District. San Francisco is now renowned for some of the best vegan cuisine in the world, Tracy Reisman wrote, and the city deserves a neighborhood named after a delicious cruelty-free food instead of the flesh of an abused animal.
Here's the thing about PETA, is that every time you think that you've come up with every seemingly obvious yet inexplicably amusing publicity stunt, they surprise you by coming up with something that you did not anticipate, such as renaming a neighborhood currently named after meat after tempeh, which is, made of grouting material or something?
No, it's a tofu product.
It's a tofu product.
Yeah.
So, and as we've talked about this before, that, you know, that I have such mixed feelings about PETA because on the one hand, they sort of irritate me, you know, because I'm a huge eater of the beef. And a looker of the bosom. But
I don't think PETA's against that.
Well, you know,
I think they're okay with you looking at bosoms.
You never know with those.
In fact, they have those stunts with the naked ladies and the furs and the cages and the whatnot.
That's one of the. Let me just say this, and I am absolutely serious about this. That's one of the savviest things they ever did was to decide to have about half of their the protests and their sort of anti-fur, anti-meat exhibits involve just bosomy chicks just standing out front going, "Hey, look at me!" And and then also because occasionally they're covered with blood too. So if you're, let's say, Aaron Duran, that's just it's an added layer of eroticism put under the entire thing.
It's a bonanza,
really. So it's impossible to entirely hate PETA because A, boobies, and then B, that they are, they are sort of clever, and that PETA's publicity stunts seem obvious, but again, only in retrospect because that had never occurred to me, the whole tenderloin thing.
Yeah.
So, which an area that I think I have only been to once in my life, and I'm almost certain it was by accident, and it. If I recall correctly, it seemed like a place to which I was not eager to return.
No, it is one of the seedier, if not the seediest part of San Francisco. And in fact, an activist who lives in the Tenderloin District named Randy Schall told the New York Times that tenderloin was actually slang for bribes, and that's how it got its name.
Interesting.
Said it wasn't like they were giving them steaks, they were giving them cash. So the mayor has yet to respond.
Okay.
Yeah.
You are listening to Legion of News at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program will be encircling the globe like a giant band of...
Meat.
No. Meat.
Wait. Maybe not like meat. Meat.
I could just... Yes, it's audio meat. With Jay Mackin, Thursdays. I can just see our entire... I can see our entire day just unfolding in front of us right now. It all just sounds like this.
It is Thursday.
Oh, my God, you're right. It is a Thursday. We need to get
the squirreliest day of the week.
You know what we need to get? I need to get a sort of a dun-dun-dun sort of a reverse fanfare. Like when something unnerving or frightening is about to happen, and there's a, like a reveal on Alfred Hitchcock Presents. That's what I need to get for the Thursday.
And then just have, a chorus of women just going, Thursday... in the background.
Okay.
Because it would be unnerving and
I thought you meant like in a
cheerful.
Camina Burana sort of a way.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe like that.
It's Thursday. Hey. Wow, we're doing it again. Here's the thing is like by dint of talking about the fact that it's Thursday, we just Thursdayed ourselves even more.
I know.
Better
that than futzering yourself.
We have to stop right now. We have to just get some modicum of control over ourselves this instant. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. Today we'll be joined by, to her unending embarrassment and misfortune, I would think, Anna Griffin from The Oregonian. She'll be in the studio with us. I'm also gonna whip up a little something. I'm going to whip up a top five for us, just with little dashes here and there, just some things around the house. I'm going to put it together and just see how it turns out. So that'll be next hour, top five. Also, Anna Griffin from The Oregonian. You can find out more about that at rickemersonshow.com. We want to thank yet another new subscriber. Cheryl sent this to me. And I may or may not have the information in front of me. I might have to bluff and just and make up his name. I believe his name is Chet, Chester, Phil, Hank, Dave, Bob, Daryl.
One of those.
Fred. Ted. Sam. No, it's Richard. So we want to thank Richard. That is the second Richard in 2 days. New subscriber, Richard, who is going to be enjoying the Rick Emerson program from now on, as all right-thinking individuals should. For just 32 cents a day, here is Don Taylor.
A TriMet bus driver said he was assaulted and punched in the face Tuesday while behind the wheel. The driver, whose name is not being released, was on a break during a spot. He was on a break on Swan Island at 2:45. He said Katrina Engblom, 25, got angry when the driver asked her for bus fare. She cursed at him, jumped off the bus, pulled on the windshield wipers, and then went to the driver's side and punched him twice in the face.
Okay. That seems like an excessive... that's a bit of an overreact.
TriMet bus driver Dwayne Williams, when asked for comment, said, "It's not that surprising. These kind of things happen every day."
Really? Well, I mean, I guess...
Yeah, they're TriMet drivers.
Well, here's the thing. We have a longtime listener. I won't give his full name, but we have a longtime listener here at this show and at the Rick Emerson Show, a guy named Steven. And Steven has been driving for TriMet for quite some time. And he's actually told me, he's just like, some days, like when I'm not working in this gig anymore, you know, he's like, when I don't have to worry about, like, you know, reaching, you know, pension or getting vested or whatever it is, whatever sort of, you know, the end zone he has set for himself. He said that the number of times per month that somebody just flat out goes crazy on a bus, and that, you know, and that it doesn't get reported, not because it's like a big cover up, but just because it's like you would exhaust yourself. There would have to be a whole section of the crime blotter and the newspaper devoted, because if you think about the people who take the bus, you know, it's not just poor and skeezy folk, as much as we sort of comedically say that is so. A lot of times it is the cerebrally challenged in some way, or maybe people who have just spent all morning you know, drinking whiskey out of a mason jar and shooting meth into their ears, you know, and it's like, but then they got to get somewhere, and maybe they just don't feel up to driving, and so they get on the bus, and that just seems like, you've just got, it's just like having a big bag of dynamite and nails that you're just sort of lugging around with you, and you're just waiting for the right moment to, you know, when it all just sort of goes wrong and explodes.
You know, probably the best convention on earth, if you wanted to hear stories about the horrible wackiness of people, would be if you could just rent, you know, a hotel, get a hotel ballroom, whatever, and put together an organization where you only invite bus drivers, people who work at the DMV, and people who work at coin-operated laundries. And then just put them all in our room and get them all to talk about, "Oh, you think that's bad? One time this guy came in and..."
We should totally create a spinoff program over at the Emerson News Network. We should totally create a spinoff program called Worst Customer Ever.
We could do that. Where's your pad of paper for jotting down notes?
Where is your pad now?
Where's your godforsaken savior pad?
Okay, you got to give me credit there for the pad and, you know,
pad, God,
three
pad,
letters,
three
D.
Three letters, D. Yeah.
Vowel in the middle.
It's awesome.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. We don't know why either. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor. Coming up next hour, The Rick Emerson Show. Still to come this hour, Science on the March. Also, your entertainment news. Don't forget, if you want to get this program later on the day, you can do it via what, Don?
iTunes.
That's right. Also, as a direct MP3 download here or Legion of News. .com, where the table this morning is covered in shot glasses. Here's Don Taylor.
If you're looking for raccoon meat...
And I am.
You won't be able to find it at a country convenience store in South Carolina after state health inspectors told employees to throw out their supply.
Come on!
Tipped off by a complaint, inspectors recently found the cleaned raccoon meat in plastic bags inside one of the store's coolers, along with bagged ice. Tom Berry, spokesman for the state's Department of Health and Environmental Control, said, "In my 28 years with the agency, it's the first time I've heard of this. My inspectors, they see all kinds of things, but this is something new even to them." The Lucky 7 store, located in Gadsden, near the state capital of Columbia, South Carolina, removed the meat upon request, but when inspectors went back several days later, they found it outside the building near some trash, and apparently that was not good enough because Berry says, "We'd instructed the employees to bag it, pour bleach on it, tie it up, and put it in the dumpster."
So they, when you said they had raccoon meat, this wasn't like, I mean, it wasn't like from Bob's, you know, Bob's Raccoon Emporium or something. I mean, it was like, were they just catching it themselves and just sticking it in a display case with an apple in its mouth?
Quite possibly.
Awesome.
Apparently, there is no law banning the sale of raccoon meat in South Carolina, but state and federal officials don't certify it as being safe for human consumption.
Wait, so you can sell it, but you could sell it for, like, pet food or something.
Right.
Or, you know, whatever, mulching.
Kind of like horse meat, like, I believe.
Can you not sell horse meat as a food?
I don't think it can be. It's certified by the FDA for human consumption.
That's interesting.
I remember my mother talking about in the olden days when she and her family were quite poor, and they would go to the meat market, and there was horse meat there, and it was ostensibly sold for dog food. But people bought it and ground it up and used it for, like, you know, hamburger.
That's
something.
One of those things that... Not that I'm, you know, like hankering to have a hunk of horse or anything, but it is one of those things about which I am just sort of intellectually curious, because it does seem like, I don't know, in some big, broad, vague way, that horses and cows can't be that dissimilar. So you got to figure, you know.
Yeah, they're both. The thing with horses is that horses are not traditionally bred for,
so
for eating. And they, yeah, and they stand up, they run around a lot, and so they're really stringy.
They're all sinewy.
Yeah. So they don't make good steaks.
Not unlike Lieutenant Daniels on The Wire.
Right. Anyway, Brett Witt, a spokesman for the Department of Natural Resources, said that raccoon meat is kind of like squirrel. People do eat it. It's kind of on the lower end of animals, not as popular as deer or rabbit, and said noted that there is a danger of ingesting any wild animal without proper preparation.
And by people, we mean Governor Mike Huckabee. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Still to come this hour, Science on the March, entertainment news. Did I hand you that sound?
You did.
Excellent. Let's see. Next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program will graze your ear holes as well if you are a subscriber. So this is Don Taylor at the news desk.
The theme park killer whale who killed a trainer last year has returned to the stage at SeaWorld in Orlando.
For a minute, I thought you said that. I thought you were implying there was a new theme park called Killer Whale.
The Killer Whale Park.
The new theme park, Killer Whale, opened today. And then it just cuts to, like, people just running out of the park screaming, covered in blood.
Telecom made his first appearance on Wednesday in a show called Believe. But some don't believe he should perform again.
Now I'm just picturing
it. You handed me this, and I'm just reading it. You should have vetted this before it came to me.
But as when you said that the exhibit was called Believe, now I'm just picturing, as we said yesterday, I believe on one of the 17 shows we did, that everything in my head sort of ends up as an Arrested Development jump cut. So I'm just picturing now just the whale just sort of tossing the trainer back and forth while that Cher song kind of plays in the back.
I was thinking that, too.
Yeah, in the fork.
Exactly that.
Do you believe in laughter? Let's get a snow cone, kids.
Gray Stafford is a longtime marine mammal trainer, and he says this is the right thing to do.
I think it's absolutely the right move to make. I think the folks at SeaWorld were wise to take their time and look at the process, look at their staff, look at the situation, and come up with a plan that gets Tillicum back into a familiar show training environment.
Stafford says the return is good for SeaWorld and for the whale.
Gives the trainers an opportunity to enrich his life, to provide him more choices in his day and more enrichment.
And in his diet, apparently.
Oh, Tillicum.
All right.
Oh, you murderous beast.
Well, they say that it's good for the whale, but of course that's deceptive because of course it's good for the whale because we've managed to hobble it by keeping it in a cage its entire life, so now that it can't survive in the wild. And I'm not some animal rights nutcase or whatever, but I mean, when they say, well, this is really the best thing for the whale, well, it wouldn't be the best thing for the whale if you hadn't just captured it and stuck it in a box when it was, you know, when it was born.
There's something very weird about animals like killer whales and white tigers and such that we say that we're actually helping the animal by making sure the species doesn't go extinct. But the thing is, all we're doing is just capturing them and breeding them in captivity. So we're keeping examples of them alive. But it's not like we're really helping them. It's not like, you know, we're helping the environment or the world in any way because you're just, it's like, you know, want to make sure that we don't, like, these things don't go extinct. So let's just make more of them and put them in boxes.
It isn't really, I don't think I've ever been to a zoo either where you look at the animal and, boy, he loves it here. He's having a great time. Normally it's a polar bear just sitting there on a rock, just looking at the ground going, well, I guess they'll feed me eventually, you know, and meanwhile, there's just some jagoff from California with, you know, like big roomy dolphin shorts and a camera around his neck just going, kids, look at the bear, you know, and that's, you know, and you just at that moment, you just go like, I'm sorry. I apologize on behalf of my people.
I was at the Los Angeles Zoo once, and I was sort of up on this little hill looking down, and there were two enclosures right next to each other. One was seals, and right next to it was the spectacled bear. And the spectacled bear was just sitting.
Spectacled bear? Was he wearing a pince-nez?
No, they have little black circles around their eyes, and they're called spectacled bears. And he was just sitting in the middle of this thing, just sitting there. And they're big, big, nice enclosures at the LA Zoo. As zoos go, it's very, very nice. The bear's just sitting there, just staring off into space. And then the seals in the next enclosure over just started kind of going a little bit crazy. And because apparently they realized that, you know, it was time for the tram to be coming by.
Right.
And so and I'm watching the seals, and the seals are like jumping up and peeking around. They're trying to peek through the fence to see if the tram comes. And the tram comes, it pulls up, and they start looking at the seals and giving them fish. And so the seals are all really, really happy because, you know, they're getting fish. Meanwhile, the spectacle bear is just sitting there just kind of looking over like, oh, Tram's here. Tram pulled up a little bit further so they could see the bear. Everyone started looking at the bear. He stood up, started walking around, rolling on his back, doing stuff. They threw him some kind of a treat. He took it, and everyone was going, the bear's awesome! Tram pulls away. Bear just goes back to exactly the same spot and just sat back down and just started staring at the ground again.
Turned back into the WB Frog.
Okay, got 15 minutes till the next time they come around. Yeah.
The, you know what? You know what other creatures are like that? If you go to the, well, it's not there anymore, but there was this pet store at the Lloyd Center Mall, which I think turned out to be just, not even a puppy mill, but a mill for just, like, everything. I think it was, like, a child mill and a puppy mill and, you know, just a mill for sadness. And it was always staffed by these weird goth kids who had, like, 70 pounds of metal in their face, and they were just wearing a shirt that said, you know, like, you know, deicide travesty or something. But you would go in, and Laura and I used to talk about the shameless mice, because you would walk by the rodent section, and it's like the gerbils and hamsters would be sitting there looking at you with their beady eyes like, I'll kill you someday. I'll learn how to use a knife, and I will avenge my people. But then you'd see the mice, and the mice would just be, look at me, look at me! And they would just be running around like they were just on crack. And the minute you approached the cage, they would all fight to get on the wheel. And you know the little running wheel that goes, you know, the whatever you call it, the metal wheel that they run on, presumably for exercise or, you know, fun. And they would all just they became like a little flying Willendus troop in there, but like covered in fur. And it was always sort of sad, because then I just thought of the kids in Annie who were trying to, like, you know, kind of gussy themselves up whenever, like, Mr. Moneybags comes through looking for a new child, you know, and take me away from this miserable place. Look at me. On the wheel.
If adopt me. I'm cute. Otherwise, they're going to feed me to a snake. Sadness okay. And death.
That's the mice there, not the kids.
Yeah, I know. The city of Portland released an audit Wednesday showing Water Bureau customer payments have been used for more than water and sewer services. The city auditor's office said their investigation was to find out if money was being used for non-utility purposes.
Massage therapy.
And if the decisions to use that money were done in accordance with city code. Auditor LaVon Griffin-Vallad's division found that in at least two cases...
I didn't understand any of those syllables. They just mashed together into one big sort of...
LaVon Griffin-something-or-other found that money not requested or approved by the city council was spent on projects unrelated to customers' water or services, sewer services. For example, the Yon building, because I have now learned that it's not pronounced the Yon, the Yon building in Waterfront Park, which was remodeled and leased to the Rose Festival Foundation for $1 a month, cost more than $1.5 million. The Rose Festival is paying off the remodeling costs, but ratepayer money will continue to be spent on maintenance of the building. State law mandates sewer rates only be collected to pay for activities or projects related to the city's sewer system. The auditor's office said the city attorney interprets that to mean customers are to only pay for something they get in return.
Yeah, I would imagine that's the case.
Yeah, the report also showed the Water Bureau funding cannot be transferred to the city's general fund or to special funds that are not related to the water system. In the past 5 years, the audit showed funds for parks and planning programs not directly linked to utility services jumped from $200 to more than $2.5 million.
Is this just where they just sort of view it as all being in one pile somewhere?
Yeah, they said, we need more money. We're not actually spending any of this sewer money. Let's just move it over here.
All right.
Water Bureau Commissioner Randy Leonard said that he, quote, generally concurred with the audit's results, but he defended the non-utility work. He added that no new hires were used to renovate the building and were therefore opportunity costs, since the employees performed maintenance on all bureau facilities and therefore would have been paid anyway.
Opportunity cost is a great term because no one knows what it means, but it allows him to say that he has answered the question fully and completely, and then the question presumably goes away and nobody has any additional information. Well done, sir.
Another project, the Water House in Northeast Portland, was found to have been neither requested in budget nor approved in council. Water Bureau officials decided to develop, then sell the home and recover the value of the costs and land. The building cost $200,000. The land was valued at $150,000. The goal was to sell the house for $400,000. And so far, the Bureau has spent more than $700,000 on the project.
You know, if we had just taken the time and energy that you spent, but newspapering and the writing in various journalistic outlets, and that I spent, just playing Bachman Turner Overdrive records for idiots. If you and I had just taken that time and energy and we had put ourselves into professional politics, I think we'd be flourishing by now. I think that is an environment in which you and I would thrive. next time around.
Yeah, we are just amoral enough that I think we would do brilliantly at it.
Well, really, and it's just, and because if you're a politician, in a weird way, it's the best of jobs, worst of jobs, right? Because it's like, because you are presumably, you have access to, or to some degree are in charge of, a certain amount of money, and you have a certain amount of power, and yet at the same time, it's such a dreadfully dull job in many ways that nobody really wants it. And everybody sort of dislikes you because you're a politician, yet at the same time, they all kind of respect you even if they don't want to, just because we've been sort of told that we're supposed to. You know, you've sort of trained to think that way since you're a kid, and they all kind of fear you because there's this sense, probably unfounded and without basis, but there's this sense that they could probably get you audited if they want to. And so, really, it is kind of the best job in some ways because you're just left alone by the public who recognize that they have no ability to do what you do and no interest in learning how to do it because, again, it all just seems to be a lot of ledger work, you know? So, if you have the time and ability and whatever, I'd say that maybe, you know, you just put your demonstrable energy toward that as a career goal.
Well, I thought at one time that it might be interesting to run for mayor. And my entire platform would be that for the first year that I was mayor, I would just say no to any new project that costs money. You know, ongoing things, you know, we're already committed to those, we'll have to do this. But anything new that anybody brings that is going to cost a bunch of money, no. For an entire year, no. Also for that first year, no unnecessary street repairs. No non-emergency street repairs. Also, I might consider us going an entire summer without any fun runs or street fairs or parades. And I think that people would vote me in just because I would be promising that they would be able to get around town between mid-June and August.
Just like the creation of a mini Autobahn that goes through downtown Portland. That's what you ought to say that you're going to do. Just do some sort of a wire and steel mesh enclosed highway on which you can go 800 miles an hour, and it goes right past Macy's downtown. Here's what you could do to get elected mayor, probably in this city. You could just say that you were going to do sort of an Ed TV kind of a thing, where just as mayor, you would just be on camera all the time. Like during business hours or, anytime you were meeting with anyone regarding city business, you'd be on camera.
Yeah.
You know, now if you're going home to take a whiz or something, you're not going to be. But I mean, anytime you were either at work at the office or even if it's not business hours, people say, well, what about backroom deals? Anytime you are discussing city business with somebody, you are on camera and the whole thing is streamed to a website. People can watch the whole deal. And somebody would say, well, you know, you're never going to be able to get anything done that way if people feel like their discussions with you are going to be on camera. You'd be like, then we don't get things done. And then this would be the best thing. The best part about this, though, is that if you were like, you know, the TV mayor or whatever, where everything you did, you said was going to be streamed Jenny Ringley style to a website somewhere where the people could see you, you then receive no blame for anything because if sort of political power brokers or deal makers or, you know, the smoke-filled room guys don't want to talk to you, what happens is there's just a couple of, you know, hours every day of you just sitting at your desk going, I'm right here. Anybody wants to come talk to me about city business? I guess nobody's interested.
I was supposed to have a meeting from that guy from Metro, but when he found out about the camera, he decided he wasn't going to show up.
I don't know why Randy Leonard canceled lunch at the last moment. It's a mystery. And then just sitting there, and everybody would be, and that would actually be a perfect illustration of who in the city is dealing above board and who is not. Because the guys who were dealing above board, obviously, would come and talk to you. They would have no fear about being seen on camera discussing the inner workings of the city with the mayor.
It's brilliant.
Rick Emerson's a genius.
It is.
Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
A space heater sparked a fire that killed a Forest Grove woman and injured her teenage grandson on Monday. The couple in their 70s had used the portable electric space heater in the room where they slept, and it was left on and in use too close to a couch. The investigators discovered what appeared to be boxes of clothing inches away from the heater. The clothing likely ignited first and spread the fire to a nearby couch, as well as the hospital-style bed used by Mrs. Long. The tremendous fuel load of the couch and bed caused the fire to burn extremely quickly, and the fire spread rapidly through the rest of the house. This was at 2235 Laurel Street, where Hiram Long and Velva Lee Long, both 76, lived with their grandchildren. The home did not have any working smoke detectors. Hiram managed to escape along with his two teenagers, but Velva Lee was confined to a wheelchair and was not able to get out alive. The teenager's mother lives with her boyfriend in a detached home on the property.
I'm stunned by that latest last sentence there. I'm shocked. Hiram and Velva Lee.
Okay.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program. Never mind. Skip it. Is this accurate, the corpse taser penis?
Uh-huh.
Okay, corpse watch coming up next hour. Also, taser watch coming up next hour and penis watch coming up next hour. All put together with loving care for Oregonian columnist Anna Griffin, who is going to be here in the studio with us.
But, you know, she comes in on Thursdays, the squirreliest day of the week.
Yeah.
And so she's got to be kind of used to it by now.
She gets what's coming to her, Don. And what's coming to her is a corpse watch, also a taser watch, also with the penis. You're listening to Legion of News. Here's Don Taylor.
Radiation levels in the ocean off a troubled Japanese nuclear plant hit all-time highs. A former nuclear plant operator, Michael Friedlander, says the higher levels of radioactive iodine are not what you want to see, but that there's a bigger concern.
This is Japan.
The issues, though, that we really need to follow and that give me concern are the reports of cesium showing up in the water, and indeed some of the samples of seafood. Some fish that have been taken over the last several days have been beginning to show contamination of the cesium.
And a decree went out from Cesium II saying that all should register for taxation.
The thing that people just aren't really considering is that nine-eyed carp are delicious. So remember that. They're a delicacy.
So you're not making that up? They're a real thing?
No.
Okay.
I made that up.
I don't know. I just,
For now.
Okay.
No.
Oh, nine-eyed.
What did you think I said?
Well, I thought you said nine-eyed.
Oh.
And I was like, well, is that some sort of like a fugu fish
no,
or something?
No. Nine-eyed.
I couldn't see the hyphen is the deal there.
Right. Should have used my air hyphen when I was talking.
That's my basketball name, air hyphen.
Let's do science.
Right. Here's your science on the march for Thursday. Right here at Legion of News. Brought to you by Squires Electric. You can contact them at squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. Thank you for joining us for Legion of News. This is Science on the March. Entertainment news coming up later in this hour. And the Rick Emerson Show next hour. Here is Don Taylor.
Well, the world can rejoice. The first monkey that acts like a cow has been discovered. The monkey regurgitates to give its food another chew, just like cows do.
A monkey that spits into its own mouth is what science has come up with. Please tell me they designed this or they engineered it in a lab.
I think he may have actually come up on this on his own.
Hey, Lamb, I created a monkey that does the coolest thing. Check this out. Blah.
Goats, cows, sheep, and other ruminants chew plants, let their meals soften in their stomachs, then throw up the larger bits into their mouths to munch on the cud some more. This chewing helps them break down their food and get all the nutrients within. Primates such as humans and monkeys seemed to have covered the full gamut of all dietary strategies seen in the animal kingdom, save rumination. Now scientists find the proboscis monkey on the island of Borneo apparently chews its cud too. Investigators used video cameras and binoculars to monitor 200 proboscis monkeys, which lived off fruit and leaves along the tributary of the Kinabatangan River in Malaysia. These primates get their names from the males' large noses, which are thought to be used in attracting females.
Belzer style.
A researcher said, there are, of course, a lot of mosquitoes and leeches in the forest. The rainy season was the worst. The river water came up to their waists, even in the forest, so they weren't having a very good time watching the proboscis monkeys. They also said they were scared of crocodiles. Anyway, but enough of her. The researchers saw 23 monkeys chew their regurgitated food at least once. The monkeys apparently suck in their abdomens and stick out their tongues before they regurgitate, keeping all the cud in their mouths. The scientists continuously observed one adult male for 169 days and watched him chew his cud for 11 days. The rumination.
I wonder at what day they wanted to kill themselves, you know? Like, at what day did they just start to maybe look through the one ads to see if there was a job? I don't know. Just like cleaning sludge out of a gutter somewhere.
Writing home, day 79. Sorry, sweetheart. Still in the jungle watching monkeys chew their own vomit.
Hate self, hate life, hate all.
Anyway, monkeys. Gorillas and even people have been known to chew regurgitated food, but this is regarded as pathological behavior.
Really? I had a friend in high school who did that. I could tell you the story, but it would turn your stomach.
Yeah. These monkeys actually seem to do it as part of their own diet, and so future research will be done to see whether monkeys such as langurs ruminate as well. And I'm sure the line is long to become a research assistant on that project.
You know, here's something. I don't even know if I should broach this Is it Broach or Ford? I don't even know if I should cross this line by asking you this. I have a question that's rolling around in my head. It's ruminating, but instead of ruminating, I'm gonna let it marinate. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the Science on the March segment, I may ask you this question I have that is somewhat related to monkeys and cud chewing. Not the same thing. Related. I may ask you that. I may not. I may in fact flip a coin to decide whether to ask the question out loud. Here's Don Taylor.
A French bulldog has been found to be a hermaphrodite. At 3 months old...
Bulldog.
Bulldog.
Okay, just check.
Yeah. At 3 months old, Tana, a female French bulldog, was brought to the vet for a routine vaccination when specialists became alarmed at the size of the dog's clitoris, which they said was much larger than normal. Tests revealed the first ever sex reversal in a French bulldog. The puppy had what is called cryptorchid testicles. Her sex chromosomes said
I don't even know what that is, but it sounds so horribly unpleasant.
Cryptorchid. Her sex chromosome said she was female, but the puppy had masculine gonads as a result of other genes in her body responsible for the formation of testicles. A genetic alteration of the reproductive system or sexual reversal has been described in many species, such as goats, pigs, horses, and even human beings. This alteration is relatively rare in small animals,
however.
Are
you just doing like a whole pile of stories now that have accumulated over the last few days that we couldn't do on the Bob Miller Show? Vomit chewing and large clitoris stories?
Oddly enough, no. These are all fresh today. This is what Thursday has wrought.
Okay.
Anyway, the doctors found that Tana's urethra ended in the bladder, and the clitoris, which was just under a half inch long, contained a penis bone, which predisposed it to urinary infections. So to prevent the dog from suffering any medical complications, the doctors decided to surgically sterilize Tana and removed her genitals.
Am I just dreaming today? Am I not even really here? Is this a thing where my mom's going to wake me up and tell me I'm late for school?
Here's my favorite part of the story, by the way.
It's not the phrase penis bone.
The veterinarian suggests that owners of hermaphrodite puppies like Tana should not be allowed to take part in breeding programs.
You think? Okay.
Because it's likely that at least half of their litters will be carriers of the mutant genes. The canine hermaphrodite siblings should also be barred from breeding programs because they could be carrying the mutations.
Right, unless you want your puppy to have a thriving career as a female WWE wrestler. And there's a handful of people who know what I'm talking about right there.
Science story the third.
Okay.
For this Thursday.
Yeah.
Prejudice against the overweight is now ubiquitous, according to a new study, which found that fat stigma had spread to places where plumpness used to be an asset. Researchers from Arizona State University tested the fatitudes of 700 people in 10 countries and cities.
Fatitudes.
Including American Samoa, Tanzania, Mexico, Puerto Rico, Paraguay, Argentina, New Zealand, Iceland, Arizona, and London. The academics expected to find fat stigma in the U.S. and the U.K., they were surprised, however, to find that negative attitudes about overweight ladies and gentlemen have spread to the farthest reaches of the earth.
I wonder what percentage of Samoa's, their GDP comes from just fat studies. And if they're tired of constantly being the first picked for that. Hey, we need to study fat people. Get me a plane to Tonga. You know, and people at Tonga, oh, here come
more. Not again.
More Americans studying fat. All right, everyone, roll yourselves to the center of the village.
Not the calipers. So,
It's like a whole village of Violet Beauregards just being taken off to the juicing room.
Lead researcher Dr. Alexander Bruce told the New York Times, "The change has come very, very fast in all these places. Of all of the things we could be exporting to help people around the world, really, negative body image and low self-esteem is not what we were hoping for."
Well, let's be honest. I mean, we started by exporting the actual fat, and so really it seems like everything else is just, inevitable.
But again, though, even in some places like, Samoa, Latin American countries, there's not traditionally been, this stigma about people being a little bit on the heavier side. But we seem to be infecting the world with our, self-loathing and hatred and our desire for people to, have no hips.
Well, but it's sort of it's a three-wave process. I mean, the first wave is that we just go by and we infect them with Filet-O-Fish, and with your McGriddle. Is the McGriddle the thing that the breakfast sandwich that's between pancakes?
Yeah, it's I think it's two little miniature... They're I've never eaten one, but I think it's sort of like an English muffin that's styled upon a blueberry waffle.
What's her name? Once Daria and I were talking at one point, and Daria confessed to being just like a huge fan of the McGriddle thing. And I was like, what is it? She's like, what's like a breakfast sandwich? But then they put it between pancakes. And it's like, I realized I had no place to criticize because that was like the same week that they were talking about that double down thing that was like a sandwich between pieces of fried chicken or something. And I was like, oh, it sounds awesome, I guess. But the first stage is we just go through and we just sort of airdrop, you know, just a lot of like tasty cakes everywhere. And then the second stage is a guy coming through and going, shame, shame. And then the third thing is when Jenny Craig arrives like a savior, like a miraculous heavenly host arrived to solve all of your problems.
That's all the science.
All right, there you go. There's your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com on the Intratron, or you can call them at 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. And if you are upgrading, installing, repairing, augmenting, tweaking, adjusting, or just, you know, want to know more about the wiring or wires in your home or your business, they are the folks to call. And we've said this before, you know, if you're going to be a licensed electrical inspector, 97% of the people fail that test the first time around. Sort of like passing the bar in an electrical sense. Joe Squires passed first time. 3% of people pass that. He's one of them. And he hires hires extra smart guys to hang around him as well. So it's a smart guy flanked by other smart guys in an entire company full of smart guys. And then also Donna, sort of sticking her head through the bottom of the screen, Butters style in the corner as the opening credits come to an end. You call Squires Electric and talk to Donna. She's a stitch, is what she is. And she'll pass you along to Joe Squires or one of his trusted compadres. They will come to your home or business and make sure that everything that needs to be working flawlessly is working flawlessly. It's 503-252-1609 or squireselectric.com. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier and better. It is Squires Electric, proud sponsors of Science on the March. Here is Don Taylor.
Police said that a...
guy.
A guy in a place.
This is okay. Like Mad Libs?
We're going to save...
A unicorn.
We're going to save this till later till I can figure out exactly where it's happening because... here's a tip. If you are...
In a biodome.
If you are someone who is responsible for a website that disseminates news and it's on the internet, one thing you should realize is that many people who come to your website to look at your stories are not going to be from your town. So they're not going to know that you're in Minnesota or Nebraska or Wyoming. So what you need to do is you need to actually put a freaking dateline on your story or just the address of where you're located on the page, on the main page of your website. Anything. Just don't assume everybody knows where Mustard Flats is. Okay. I'm sorry. Get that out. I've been wanting to get that out of my system for quite some time now.
Okay.
A University of Arkansas graduate from Rogers, Arkansas, has invented a device that is helping to clean up language on television. It's called TV Guardian, and it reads closed captioning on TV shows and movies, then mutes certain language, replacing it with a profanity-free version.
Now, where is this at?
Arkansas.
Because there is a company that was working on an experimental version of this in Utah a few years ago, and it was the same premise that they had the idea, you know, that everything had to be because they started by doing it with DVDs. They were called Clean Vision or something, or Clean Flicks or whatever.
Yeah.
But the deal is that you would be able to take in like your VHS tapes. They would chop out all the boobs and goddams, and then they would give it back to you in a less interesting, a much shorter fashion. And then
Clean Flicks also had stores
clean
where
flicks,
they rented cleaned that they would, and they got in a lot of trouble because they were doing these edits themselves.
Well, and Steven Spielberg, among other directors, threatened a lawsuit against them because he said, you know, that by definition you were having to do. He actually sort of used that used the MPAA and RIAA stuff against them. He said, well, you know, by doing this, you're having to actually alter the film and then resave it in a new version, which is a violation of my copyright. So hey, knock that off. So they were forced by dint of those lawsuits to come up with it with a different kind of technology. And so now what they do is it really is sort of brilliant. So what Clean Flicks now does is they actually sell you their own DVD player. And their own DVD player, which is specifically designed to more or less seamlessly through the use of closed captioning, detect upcoming profanity in a DVD, and then skip past it or mute it. And so now they're just taking that to the next stage, this other company, by doing it on the fly with television shows.
Yeah, apparently he said, his explanation is that he was on vacation and watched E.T. with his family and didn't realize that there was actually...
Penis breath?
Yes, exactly. There were penis breath in E.T. Also, that there are movies like, say, The Blind Side, which people might want to sit down and watch, although they shouldn't because it's kind of awful. But which could contain what some people consider questionable language. And yeah, I guess what it does, it costs $130 for standard TV, $180 for HD TV. And I guess it recognizes certain specific phrases and then replaces them with other phrases. He says, you might see something like move your tail instead of what was actually there, he said. Although that sounds really... It's got to be like in a voice that would be unlike the person who is speaking, though. So it's not like...
Well, yeah, it's got to be some sort of like a... Even if it's not the Stephen Hawking voice, it's got to be some sort of...
So you're still aware that they're swearing, and you're probably perfectly aware of what it was that they actually said.
Well, and don't you, when you're watching a movie and they edit it or something, don't you just prefer that they mute it or they bleep it or something?
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing that I, and maybe that's a generational thing too, but the bleeping I prefer over, because like a lot of things they'll do,
they
like.
Just mute the word out and keep going.
What they, like a lot of times in the, you know, what they'll do in popular music now is they'll do that thing of reversing it. So they actually reverse, so when, you know, instead of whatever the profanity is, so you'll just hear like, you know, the cuff word. You know, or something, and it's just which I find to be really distracting, and I think that probably is an age thing because my brain is, for you know, detects that something has gone awry in the song for a half a second. So I think the bleeping is a thing that I grew up with, which is why it sounds more natural to me. But any of those alternatives are preferable to the guy going, "Well, listen here, you know, listen here, you big jerk." You know, or whatever. There's a great video that went around a while back where it was like Alec Baldwin and some other guy, and they were having to do looping somewhere. They were having to do the television versions of dialogue for certain films. And it wasn't Glengarry Glenn Ross, but it was something.
Where you watch the people yelling at each other, and all of a sudden they're saying, "Forget you,
exactly.
Forget me."
And it was those guys in the studio, like doing the ADR, having to do the recording at the at the post production facility, and that they themselves couldn't even get through the fake dialogue without just losing control. You know, just busting up because it was so unbelievably ridiculous. And never mind, I could do a whole thing about it, but I won't. Here's Don Taylor.
All right. A California woman facing nearly 5 years in prison for forging drug prescriptions showed up for sentencing with a phony doctor's note seeking a delay in the proceedings.
Awesome.
Michelle Elaine Estumian was free on $45,000 bail and pleaded no contest in January to felony counts of forgery and using a fraudulent check. The 41-year-old woman arrived Monday for sentencing in a San Luis Obispo County courtroom and presented a note with a doctor's signature asking for a postponement. Prosecutor Dave Pomeroy then called the doctor, who said that it was a forgery. The judge immediately ordered Estumian into custody, and she collapsed to the floor. An ambulance took her to a hospital. Pomeroy said that she'll be sentenced later, but
Excellent. He's
just not entirely sure.
Well, you know, you got to give her credit for playing it all the way to the end. I mean, you know, for not breaking character. Sometimes if somebody else on stage forgets a line or a light burns out or something and a Fresnel goes bad and, you just lose your composure. She, even in a courtroom while fighting for her freedom, actually managed to stick it out. So Godspeed to
Acting!
You.
Acting! Oh, wait. No. What am I looking at? I'm looking for something here. Okay, we'll do this
now. You're really asking
me. I know
me
what I'm
just
going
now.
To.
Okay.
Police said a Bel Air, Ohio man had to be removed from his home on Sunday. Police said the man's skin had become attached to the fabric of the chair after he sat in it for 2 years. Authorities said he was sitting in his own feces and urine, and maggots were visible. Police were called in to
Welcome to the lunch hour, everyone.
People were called in to help transfer the man to the hospital. Authorities said they had to cut a hole in the wall to get the man out of his home. Two other able-bodied people lived there with him. Another man who had a separate bedroom.
Two other able-bodied people is sort of inaccurate, I think. That implies that he himself has a body that is able to do anything but sit.
Yeah, another man who had a separate bedroom and the girlfriend of the man who was stuck in the chair. Officials said the girlfriend served food to him since he never got up.
Well, that's just the right thing to do, Don. That's just knowing your place.
One officer said it was the worst thing he had ever responded to, and most said the worst part of all was the smell. The landlord says the man in the chair rented from her before and used to be a vital, active person. She said she checked on them periodically. Lately, he always sat with a blanket over him And she said she had no idea that it had come to that.
I mean, do you suppose he just reached a point one day where he was just like, why? What, you know, what's out there that I need? What is it? What is it? What is lurking beyond that door that I can't just get delivered to me?
I'm just curious as to at what point the person who you're involved in a relationship with.
Well, he's a good provider.
Is going along with this, because it's like, you know, day one, the person says, I'm not getting out of the chair. Would you like heat me up a pizza in the microwave? You know, day two, you say, are you getting out of the chair? And have you gone to the bathroom? And day three, you say, okay, no, I'm not going to cook you any more food. And get out of the damn chair. This is creepy.
Did somebody buy a Limburger?
But then it's like 2 years?
Yeah.
At what point do you just cave and just go, well, I guess he's never getting out of the chair?
I wonder that with the guys the Walter Hudson guys, where it's like they have to cut the side of the apartment off, you know, to get him out with the forklift or whatever. And you hear about these, you know, well, he just quit going to work. And I always wonder if there is some morning where he tries to go to work and he realizes he is, in fact, just too fat to get out of the house. And you just, and what that phone call must be like as you're just, I'm not going to be in today. I'm too fat. I can't leave the house.
I'm stuck in my chair, and I've just decided to stay here forever.
It's impossible to leave my home without removing the frame. I guess I'll just be here for a while.
Yeah.
You know, and then that's it. And what the other? If the other person goes, okay, great, and we'll call Express Personnel. Thanks so much for calling in, Walter. Oh, great. I hope the fat thing works out. Okay, good.
And then there's this point of like having to have an income of some sort. So I suppose you're probably on disability, but you have to like have the people come to the house, I guess, and interview you and talk to you. And what do you tell them? It's like, well, I need disability payments because I can't go to work because I just can't get out of my chair.
Well, but I don't even know that that's necessary, because doesn't it strike you as that he's sort of he's sort of the queen bee and everybody else is just flitting around bringing him royal jelly all day?
He must just have an amazing personality. Just a very forceful, winning, charismatic personality.
He is funny, Don. He makes us laugh, laugh, laugh while we're spooning food into his mouth and cleaning away his feces.
Or he's just pumping slurm for everyone. And
All right. We should revisit that story next hour when Anna Griffin's here. Just, you know,
okay.
Get her thoughts on things.
Sure.
You are listening to the to a Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Don't forget the Rick Emerson radio program next hour at Rick Emerson Show. .com today featuring Penis Watch, Taser Watch, Corpse Watch, Anna Griffin from the Oregonian, and mashed together some sort of a top five before that program starts. You can find out more about that at RickEmersonShow.com. Don't forget you can get this program, Legion of News, every day via iTunes. There's a direct MP3 download here, or LegionofNews.com. It's also available on your mobile device at mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
Let's do very quickly like a couple of entertainment stories.
Here's your entertainment news for Thursday.
It will probably shock no one to find out that a porn star is on the short list to land a job as Charlie Sheen's intern.
Excellent.
He's looking for someone to serve as an 8-week intern and help him promote his Twitter blog. On her own Twitter page, Isis Taylor, the porn star, said, "Made to the second round winning. People asking if I'm ready to be Charlie Sheen intern. Hell yeah, I am." Okay. There's a remake that is in the works of Total Recall, and that's going to be directed by the director of Live Free or Die Hard, Len Wiseman.
Right.
It's going to star Colin Farrell. And in somewhat interesting news, they just announced that the villain has been cast, and it will be Breaking Bad actor Bryan Cranston.
Really?
So that's something.
Well, but I guess, I mean, if you're him. And you got to figure, you know, you made your bones, as they say, in Malcolm in the Middle. And I know he did stuff before that, but Malcolm in the Middle, and then Breaking Bad. I mean, the one thing that is inarguable is this is expanding his palette. I mean, it is a different style of acting, and probably the paycheck is substantially larger than whatever he's getting from AMC, even at this point.
And speaking of making your bones, David Boreanaz has settled a sexual harassment lawsuit filed against him by an extra on his show, Bones. Christina Hagen alleged in the lawsuit that the married Boreanaz pleasured himself in front of her and sent her sexually inappropriate text messages, including a picture of his penis.
The married Boreanaz sounds like some sort of exotic bird with a huge schlong.
The suit claimed that he told her he was an executive producer and could, quote, make things happen for her. Boreanaz' lawyer dismissed the allegations as absurd when the lawsuit was filed last July last year by the woman who, by the way, is represented by Gloria Allred. Terms of the settlement are confidential. Hagen claimed the incident started in August 2009 when she was working as an extra on Bones. She and Gloria Allred sued both Boreanaz and Fox, and apparently somebody decided to just settle and make her go
away. This go away. All right. Well, with that, we'll bring a curtain down on this, another exciting installment of Legion of News. Thank you for joining us. It has been Thursday, March 31st, 2011. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here or at legionofnews.com. The Rick Emerson Show is next to rickemersonshow.com. So do give that a listen, won't you, please? At the news desk, it's Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Aglin, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kenakoa. As always, we thank you for listening, and we will see you again tomorrow. That is Friday at noon for another installment of Legion of News.